Welcome to the debate. Imagine a massive rescue operation that pulls absolutely everyone out of a churning, chaotic ocean. It saves them from drowning, but then inevitably dooms half of them the moment they finally reach the safety of the shore.
It is a wild, almost terrifying image.
It really is. That is the terrifying, beautiful tension hidden inside one of history's most misunderstood ancient texts. We are looking at the Gospel of Matthew chapter 13, specifically the parable of the dragnet. In it, you know, the kingdom of heaven is compared to a massive net cast into the sea, sweeping up fish of every conceivable kind.
Right. It is an image of profound rescue. But it ends with a stark sorting on the shoreline where the good are kept and the bad are thrown away. It is a text that forces us to grapple with what it actually means to be caught up in the work of God. It asks us to look at the visible structures of faith and decide if occupying space within them is enough to guarantee our safety.
And that brings us to the core of our disagreement today regarding the historical and theological consensus of this text. Is the primary thrust of the parable a message of profound comfort? Or is it fundamentally a severe warning? I contend that the text's primary theological weight rests on comforting believers with the knowledge that God's grace reaches everyone, regardless of their state, sweeping them up in a radically inclusive embrace.
And I contend that the parable fundamentally delivers a stark warning that mere proximity to the kingdom is not a substitute for a genuinely transformed heart.
Let us dive into the actual mechanics of the ancient imagery here, because I believe the physical realities of what is being described point overwhelmingly to radical inclusivity. When a modern person thinks of fishing, they usually picture a solitary angler on a dock with a single line, patiently waiting. It is quiet, it is precise, and it is highly targeted.
Yeah, you choose your bait based on the exact species you want.
Exactly. But that is not what is happening in this text. The Greek word used for the net here is sajane.
A massive industrial dragnet.
Right. It is not a weekend fishing trip on a placid lake. It is more like being caught in the terrifying reality of an episode of Deadliest Catch. Historically, a sajane could be up to 100 meters long.
Oh, wow. That is huge.
Massive. It was heavily weighted with lead at the bottom and lined with cork floats at the top, creating a literal moving wall in the water. You cast it out and you relentlessly drag the bottom of the sea. You pull up rocks, weeds, debris, old boots, and absolutely every living thing in its path.
It sweeps up absolutely everything.
It does not pause to evaluate the moral or spiritual quality of the fish before enveloping them. And this connects beautifully to the specific language used for the gathering itself. The Greek word for gather in verse 47 is synago.
Synago, okay.
Yeah, I was digging into modern biblical scholarship on this, and researchers point out that synago shares a root with the word for welcome. When you combine 100-meter sagini with the concept of welcoming, the primary message emerges clearly. We are looking at a radically generous God reaching into the chaotic depths of the sea to welcome the beautiful, the broken, the clean, and the unclean.
I mean, I hear that, but I come at it from a different way. Focusing exclusively on the width of the net and the generosity of the gathering completely ignores the inevitable reality of the shore. The net is not the final destination.
Well, no, eventually they pull it in.
Right, and in historical theology, the net represents the visible church, or the gospel message itself moving through time. But being in the net does not equate to salvation. When we look at the Reformation perspective, particularly through the lens of John Calvin, the net's indiscriminate sweeping creates a deeply sobering reality.
You mean the wide cast is actually setting the stage for a harsher truth?
It is unavoidable. Think about a modern analogy. Simply standing inside a garage does not turn you into a car.
Sure.
Similarly, sitting in a church pew, professing faith, or participating in the rituals of a community, meaning being caught in the net, means absolutely nothing if you are ultimately deemed a bad fish when that net is pulled in. Calvin and his contemporaries understood that the primary purpose of this text is to strip away the false security of mere association.
So stripping away the comfort.
Yes. The wide cast is not just a warm embrace, it is a mechanism that demands intense self-examination. The tragedy is not being left in the ocean. It is being brought all the way to the shore, only to be cast away because your heart was never actually transformed by the kingdom you are associating with.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective on how we inhabit that net before it ever reaches the shore. The forward momentum of the parable requires a long, slow drag through the water. This raises a crucial question for the listener. What does the church look like right now, in real time, while we are still submerged?
Which is a very messy reality.
It is. I was reading up on how Augustine handled this parable during the 4th century, specifically during the Donatus controversy, and it completely reframed my understanding of the net's purpose.
The Donatus crisis is a perfect proving ground for this parable.
It really is. For context, the Donatists were a strict, uncompromising sect in North Africa. They had survived intense persecution, and afterward, they demanded a completely pure church.
They wanted out with anyone who had compromised.
Exactly. They believed that any community containing sinners, or especially leaders who had compromised their faith to save their lives during the persecution, was no longer the true church. They essentially wanted to purge the net while it was still in the water. We see the exact same psychological mechanism today with ideological purity tests or cancel culture within communities.
This desperate need to cast out anyone who does not meet the strict standard of the group.
Yes, but Augustine used this parable to argue that the visible church is fundamentally a corpus premixtum, a mixed body. The profound comfort of the dragnet parable is that human leaders shouldn't try to prematurely establish a perfectly holy community.
Because they lack the divine omniscience to do so accurately.
Exactly that. The grace here is organizational as much as it is personal. We are not required to constantly police the borders of grace. We exist in a mixed state, and that is by divine design. So let me ask you, doesn't Calvin's demand for intense self-examination risk dragging us right back into the Donatist error?
How so?
Well, if we obsess over who is truly transformed, aren't we essentially trying to play the role of the sorters before we even reach the sand?
I hear your concern, but Calvin isn't asking us to look at the pew next to us. He is telling us to look in the mirror. The text itself provides the guardrail against Donatism. The parable explicitly reserves the sorting for the angels at the end of the age.
Right.
Human fishermen aren't doing the sorting.
It is highly significant that the sorters are celestial, not the human fishermen. The fishermen pulling the net represent pastors, apostles, and everyday believers. Their job is simply to drag the net through the water. Acknowledging Calvin's warning does not mean we start purging our congregations or canceling our neighbors.
So it's an internal posture.
Yes. The warning is not an invitation to judge others in the net. The warning is an absolute mandate to examine oneself.
The trajectory of their affections, not just their physical location. The Donatists wanted to look outward and judge the person across the aisle. Calvin says the fact that the church is a corpus premixtum is exactly why you cannot rely on the fact that you are sitting in the net.
Because the net is full of everything.
Right. If the net contained only the pure, then mere presence would guarantee your safety. But because the net contains absolutely everything, the good, the bad, the apathetic, your mere presence guarantees nothing. The warning is intensely personal. It shatters the complacency of cultural religion.
I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning, because it forces us to ignore the structural makeup of the net itself and how it acts upon the chaotic sea. We have to remember how the ancient Near Eastern mind viewed the ocean. The sea was not a place of recreation.
No, it was the abyss.
It represented chaos, death, and the monstrous unknown untouched by divine order.
The primordial deep where Leviathan dwells.
Yes, it was the ultimate hostile environment. So being pulled from the sea is inherently an act of rescue. Jerome, in the late 4th century, offered this incredibly vivid interpretation of the net's physical structure. He envisioned the cords of the net as being literally woven together by the Old and New Testaments.
That is a very poetic image.
It is. The text, the promises of God, the historical covenants, these are the strong ropes. And this net is cast into what Jerome called the bitter whirlpools of the world specifically to pull people to safety.
So the focus is on the rescue.
The action of the net is entirely salvific. It creates a protective barrier against the chaotic darkness of the sea. The focus of the text is on the profound, almost exhausting effort God exerts to weave a structure capable of dragging humanity out of the bitter whirlpools.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. Jerome's metaphor is beautiful, and the idea of the testaments weaving together to form a safety net is conceptually lovely. But it completely ignores the explicit, unvarnished words of Jesus at the end of the parable regarding the end of the age.
You think he is ignoring the judgment aspect?
If the net is purely a protective barrier, if the main point is just the rescue from the water, then what happens on the shore makes absolutely no sense. For a counter perspective from that exact same historical era, we have to look at John Chrysostom,
the famous preacher of Constantinople.
Yes, and he was not nearly as romantic about this text as Jerome was. Chrysostom equated the net with the preaching of the apostles, the literal fishers of men. And while he acknowledged that the net gathers humanity without distinction, he focused heavily on the mechanics of what happens to those who are thrown away.
Because Jesus explicitly mentions a furnace of fire in verse 50.
Exactly.
Which is usually where interpretations veer into strict literalism and, frankly, fear-mongering.
But that is exactly where Chrysostom is so brilliant, and why his warning is so much more terrifying than simple fire and brimstone literalism. Chrysostom argued against a strictly physical reading of the fire. He taught that the true torment of the bad fish is the unbearable spiritual tribulation of being permanently alienated and abandoned by God.
That is an intense way to look at it.
That is the furnace. So think about how that acts on the listener, psychologically. The horror isn't physical burning. It's the psychological dread of realizing you are held by grace your entire life. You are inside the woven ropes of the covenants, and you entirely miss the point. It's the sheer weight of eternal regret.
The mechanism of regret. Realizing you had every opportunity and squandered it.
It is crushing, and that proves the text is meant to terrify the complacent. The net doesn't just pull you to safety. It pulls you toward an absolute, unyielding standard of judgment. If the furnace is not just a campfire, but the spiritual horror of divine abandonment, then the net is not just a rescue vehicle.
It is something darker.
It is a conveyor belt toward a terrifying reckoning for those who have not allowed the gospel to actually change their nature.
I see the weight of that, but let's progress chronologically to the final moment of the parable, because I think the language there pushes back against Chrysostom's severity. The net is full, and it is dragged onto the shore. I want to focus on the specific Greek word used when the net is drawn up out of the water, anabibazo.
Meaning to cause to go up or to ascend.
Right, to cause to ascend. Modern theologians view this as a deeply subtle but profound foreshadowing of the final resurrection. All of humanity is pulled out of the dark world and caused to ascend, brought before God. There's a universal upward trajectory to this parable.
A movement out of the deep.
Humanity is not left to drown in the abyss. The sweeping of the Sagini ensures that. I frame this ascent as a deeply hopeful movement. The primary action of God is to pull us up, out of chaos, into his presence. Yes, the sorting happens, but look at the sheer logistical effort.
The effort of the gathering itself.
The overwhelming energy of the kingdom in this parable is spent on the gathering, the holding, and the ascending.
That's a compelling argument. But have you considered what the shoreline actually represents in biblical geography? The shoreline is where the sea stops. It is literally a limit being set upon the sea of the world. The chaos is bounded.
God drawing a line in the sand against the abyss.
Precisely. And the ascent, the anabizao, is not the climax of the story. It is simply the necessary precursor to the absolute finality of the angel sitting down to sort. You cannot judge what remains hidden in the deep.
Right, they have to be pulled up first.
Universal resurrection is not in itself universal salvation. The resurrection simply ensures that no one escapes the evaluation. The separation of the wicked from the righteous is the actual climax of the parable. It heavily emphasizes that a universal resurrection leads directly to a highly exclusive division.
That's an interesting point, though I would frame it differently. If we lean entirely into that exclusive division, doesn't that render the massive, indiscriminate nature of the net somewhat cruel? Think about it. If God knows the bad fish will be thrown into the darkness of spiritual alienation, as Chrysostom argues, why drag them out of the chaotic sea in the first place?
Why not just leave them?
Yeah, why use a Sagini at all?
Why not use a targeted line with specific bait and only catch the good fish to begin with?
Because the kingdom of heaven operates on the principle of a universal offer, which vindicates the justice of God. The wide net is the visible, undeniable proof that God's invitation was unrestricted. No one who faces the angelic sorting on the shore can claim they were never caught up in the grace of God, never brought into the sphere of the church, or never exposed to the woven testaments of Jerome.
It removes all excuses.
Exactly. The sheer massive size of the net validates the justice of the final sorting. They were in the net. They experienced the upward pull of the ascent. They simply refused to let the reality of the kingdom alter their nature while they had the time. That is the ultimate tragedy.
That is a remarkably cohesive way to view the tension, even if I find it heavier on the justice side than the mercy side. When I look at the parable of the dragnet, I fundamentally see the Sagani, woven meticulously by the scriptures, embodying a radical, welcoming synagogue.
The overwhelming grace.
Yes. For me, it serves as a profound comfort. It tells the broken, the anxious, and the marginalized that God's net does not target the worthy. It does not require you to clean yourself up before you are caught. It indiscriminately pulls humanity from the chaotic sea, securing us in a corpus permixtum, where we are given the grace of time, safety, and association.
And while I acknowledge the beauty of that initial gathering, my stance remains that the unavoidable shores, the angelic sorters, and Chrysostom's severe vision of spiritual alienation must define our response to this text. It serves as a stark, necessary warning to those merely occupying space in the visible church without undergoing genuine spiritual transformation.
It demands more than just being there.
The ultimate question isn't whether the net is big enough to catch you, it's whether you're willing to breathe the air once it pulls you to the surface. The net is an opportunity, not a guarantee.
It is fascinating how a single ancient metaphor can hold both of these realities so perfectly in tension. I think we both agree that the parable brilliantly illustrates the current messy inclusivity of the visible church, juxtaposed with the absolute clarity of future judgment.
Absolutely. The tension is the engine of the text. We remain at odds over which element, the radical generosity of the gathering or the severe reality of the sorting, is the primary driver. But removing either piece causes the whole theological structure to collapse into something that is no longer the gospel.
Complexity often requires multiple viewpoints to fully appreciate. And there is certainly much more to explore in this material regarding eschatology and the nature of the church. As we wrap up, we want to leave you, the listener, to weigh the comfort of the gathering against the warning of the shore.
It's a lot to think about.
Think back to that dark water and the massive weighted net scraping the bottom of the sea. Are you comforted by the sheer indiscriminate reach of its cords, or are you preparing yourself for the moment those cords are pulled onto the sand? Thank you for joining us.